If you've got your scriptures handy, turn to the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy, chapter 11 at this point. We're about two-thirds of the way through chapter 11, where we ended last time. And it begins this way in verse 26. It says, "Behold," Re'eh is the Hebrew there, which is the name of the Parsha, of course. "Behold, I set before you," this is Moshe speaking, "a blessing and a curse." And here it gets interesting. We've seen this metaphor before, and it's, again, it's one of my favorite references from, particularly Deuteronomy chapter 30. "I've laid before you this day life and blessing, death and cursing." And here he says something very similar. "I set before you this day a blessing and a curse." And right off the bat, we'll get into something that is a little bit interesting. This is another one of those Rashi-isms where if you look at the blessing and the curse, they're not the usual conditions. Says, "A blessing that you shall hearken unto the commandments of Yahuwah Eloheka, which I command you this day. And a curse if you shall not hearken to the commandments of Yahuwah Eloheka, but turn aside out of the way I've commanded to go after other gods, fake mighty ones, Elohim, that you have not known." So let's talk about that for a second, because the King James-ish translation that I'm looking at actually gets it wrong. The word in Hebrew is usually im, if. But that's not the word that's used here. It actually says asher. And technically, like I said, Rashi makes a big point on this one. It means a blessing that you shall hearken, and the curse if you shall not hearken. And in the past, I've used the example of if you, let's say you were to offer a child a reward, and you say to the child, "Okay, if you will go do your chores, I'll give you your allowance." All right, well, then the child knows that the allowance is conditional if he first does the chores, right? "I'll give you this allowance if you will do the chores." But how about if I said, "I'll give you this allowance so that you will do your chores"? Do you see the subtle difference? The child expects that the money now is coming up front. I'll give you this allowance, and I will trust that you will do what you ought to be doing later. And that is the key difference here. "I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. The blessing that you hearken." The blessing literally is essentially it's an upfront agreement. The curse follows later if you will not hearken. And to my mind, that is a really wonderful distinction. It's one of those little subtleties in Torah that points out the difference between the blessing and the curse. And this is something I'm also going to talk about a little bit this weekend, because I've had some feedback, and I know that as times get more and more difficult, we always talk about the news each week. We'll do that this week, too. That'll be no exception. But it's, to some extent, it's darker and darker. And the level of lawlessness in the country just seems to be almost beyond our ken. And it's difficult for us to put our arms around sometimes. It's getting to be so nasty. And certainly I think that applies to these curses as well. No question. Scripture is full of curses for people that will not walk in obedience. And if there's anything that describes the United States, I got to say that does it. So I think it's particularly appropriate for us to focus on the fact that the blessings come first. Hey, isn't that interesting? As a condition of continued obedience. And now we seem to be at the point where we've not only not earned any continued blessing, but are in fact the curses that are so richly deserved. "It'll come to pass," says verse 29, "that when Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh brings you into the land, you're going to set these blessings upon Mount Gerizim, the curse upon Mount Ebal." So there is a visual picture that's laid out here. Blessings on one of these two peaks, Har, and a curse upon the other one, so we can see it. "If you pass over the Jordan to possess the land, you will go in and you will dwell therein, and you shall," he says, "observe," here comes this Hebrew mindset understanding again, "observe to do," shamar is the word there, "all the statutes and ordinances which I set before you this day." Now, chapter 12, and these next couple, three or four, I'm going to spend probably the majority of this evening talking about those. We'll go a little bit faster when we hit some of the other parts, because I just can't hide it. I think chapter 12 and 13 are some of the most important in the Torah, and they are so, so key to our understanding. These, it says, kind of echoing something we've heard before, are the statutes and the ordinances. The word there is chim, and mishpatim, statutes and ordinances, which you shall do in the land that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh gives you to possess, all the days you live upon the earth. And then he says something that we've just seen of recent note as well. You are to utterly destroy all the places where in the nations that you're fixing to kick out of here served their gods, upon the high mountains, the hills, under every leafy green tree. And then he goes on to say some things. Now, at this point, I got some notes in my margins, and I want to make sure we talk about this too. This is a little bit on the nerdy side so far as the Hebrew language is concerned, but it has to do with the way verbs are conjugated. And there are a number of conjugations, but one of them, and the one that's used in this case, is called piel, the piel form of the verb. Now, the way I like to think about it, this is probably not 100% correct, but at least it gives you the gist of it. The piel form is not just an action form, it's like a really intense action form, okay? In other words, you can break something. That would be the normal conjugation in the Hebrew. Or you can smash it to smithereens. And that would be kind of the way you'd think of the PL form. Now, there's another thing you can do in Hebrew. And that, of course, is you can repeat something twice. Dying, you shall die. And as a matter of fact, that's exactly the phrase that is used here. Not the dying part, but the repeat it twice part. It says, Abad te abadon, abadun, I guess. Abad te abadun. You recognize the same root is repeated in there, and in this case, it's in the PL form too. Okay, what am I trying to point out? That literally, what this says is you are to, come on, man, you're to smash to smithereens, destroy utterly. Bang, bang. Get rid of these things. All of these places wherein the nations that you are to dispossess have served their gods. In English, the word utterly destroy kind of gets it. But I think if we look at it and understand the Hebrew, it helps to really put in perspective just how enthusiastic, how utter the destruction that he is referring to here is. And then if we don't get it, hey, listen to what verse 3 says. It also uses the peel form of these verbs. You shall break down, smash them up, their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, burn. And I'm picturing not just, you know, light a match to it, but take a torch to it, put an incendiary smoke bomb and underneath of it and douse it with gasoline. Burn these suckers with fire, their asherim, and hew down the graven images of their gods, that you shall peel, 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 destroy their name out of that place. Exterminate, blot out, do away with. You get the picture? This is emphatic. You are not to do similarly to Yahuwah Eloheka. And to my mind, this too, I think, is particularly apropos today. Because, folks, you know, we live in a land where we're seeing the pagan idolatry literally coming out of the closet, coming out, there's a particularly appropriate metaphor to use, coming out of the woodwork, coming out of the stones, the rocks, you name it. It's oozing out of everywhere, and it's flowing like lava out of a volcano from Washington, D.C., in so many respects. These are fake gods if there ever were. They're above the law, and they see themselves literally as capable of saying that God of the Bible, we hate him the way he hates these idols. He's not welcome. In other words, the battle lines are being drawn. And I guess, truly, there's nothing new under the sun. It says in verse 5, the place where Yahuwah chooses out of all your tribes to put his name, That's where you're going to come and bring your sacrifices, your korban, your burnt offerings, your tithes, all of these things, your free will offerings. There you shall eat before Yahuwah Eloheka, the Lord your God, says King James, but I like the Hebrew better, and you shall rejoice. Shemach. Shemach, shemach, shemach. Have we ever heard a root word like that? Sure, right? You've heard Simcha Torah, the joy of Torah. That's that same root word. The Shem Mem Chet. Rejoice in all that you put your hand to, you and your house, because of all this stuff that he has blessed you with. Not just stuff in a physical sense, but of all of these things in a physical, in a spiritual sense, in every way you can name. You shall not do after the way we do here today, every man, whatever is right in his own eyes. But when you go over the Jordan, well, and you're going to dwell in safety, rest from your enemies round about, it'll come to pass that he will eventually put his name to dwell at a place. And this is the place. Of course, this is the place that we know that at some point in the future, later on, David's son, David will begin the process. Shlomo, Solomon, will continue and build the temple. You are to rejoice before Yahuwah Eloheka. You, your sons, your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, the Levite within your gate. Remember, he doesn't have any portion or inheritance with you. And don't just bring your burnt offerings anywhere. Bring them to that place. There are some more comments about the nature of the offerings and how and where it's going to be done. You can eat flesh within your gates. Make sure you, it's the clean and the unclean folks may eat thereof. Don't eat the blood, he says. Pour that out upon the earth. Don't eat the tithes of your corn, your wine, your new oil, or any of those things. But you are to eat them before Yahuwah Eloheka and the place that he chooses, along with your sons, your daughters, your manservants, and so forth, so that you can, here's that word again, rejoice. Shemach, simcha. All of those same words that this concept of rejoicing appears in here over and over again. And it's appropriate. These people are coming into the land, and they need to understand the blessings and the curses. We rejoice first in thankfulness. And, of course, the sad part of this is that when that doesn't happen, and indeed it didn't, not after a certain number of years, this is where we find ourselves today. It's also an indication of what we can look forward to again. Take heed that you do not forsake the Levite, it says. And then he gives some other alternative instructions about, hey, he's going to put his name someplace, and if it turns out that it is too far away from you to go there, then there is an alternative process. He reminds us again, don't eat the blood. The life is in the blood. Don't eat the life with the flesh poured out on the earth like water. Don't eat it, because it will therefore go well with you and your children after you. Again, offer your burnt offerings, flesh and the blood, upon the altar of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and the blood of your sacrifices is poured out against the altar. Then you can eat the flesh. Observe all of these commandments, all these words, Devarim, which I command you, so that it can go well with you and your children after you forever. When you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yahuwah Eloheka, when he cuts off these nations and you dwell in their land and dispossess them, take heed. Here's where the plot thickens again as we hit to the end of chapter 12. Take heed that you are not ensnared by these bogus gods. And for crying out loud, here's the question that I think is so interesting. Do not inquire after these gods and ask the folks that you're dispossessing, hey, how do you guys do it? How do you serve these fake gods? Even so will I do likewise. This is something that seems to come up periodically. Hey, don't you think that it's a good thing? You know, look, I know that there's a lot of paganism in the Catholic churches of the world. By the way, that includes all of the other Sunday-keeping denominations. Whether they'll admit it or not, folks, there has been so much paganism that's brought in, and it's still, pick a denomination, Methodist, Episcopalian, Baptist, you name it, if they're keeping the Sun God Day and they're keeping Ishtar and Xmas and all that kind of stuff, they probably don't really even have a clue about how much this still applies. Don't inquire after how they served their gods. Well, no, wait a second. See, the Catholic Church tells us it's okay. The ends justify the means. Now, don't you know that we took all of those pagan customs in and we Christianized them, cleaned them up? Yeah. Now, think about that. We cleaned up those pagan things by, what, defiling the worship that is no longer the way Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh himself said he wanted it. What is verse 12, 30, and 31 reminding us? Don't do it. It's a snare. It's a trap. It's a trap. You are not, it says, as if it wasn't really already pretty clear how he used the peel form for destroying all of their pagan stuff. You shall not do unto Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh this way, because all of these abominations, these things he hates, they've done. Even their sons and the daughters, if you hadn't noticed, they have burned in their fire to their so-called gods. Does that sound familiar, folks? Well, we don't burn them anymore. The baby parts are too valuable. No, better to cut them up and ship them off. We can get a lot of money. And this is where we are today. Oh, you see, Mark, we don't actually sacrifice children to Molech. Pardon me for my bluntness. The hell we don't. And by the way, that's the royal we. I know there are a lot of us that object highly to that. But nevertheless, whether we like it or not, there are a lot of people trying to make the claim that they're doing it in our names. How do you fight that? Well, you make it darned clear that no, they're not. We're sacrificing these children in your name. We're taking your tax dollars to pay for this fine stuff. The hell you are. It's up to us not to sit quietly by while they try to claim these things in our name. Why? Because every abomination which he hates, they've done unto their gods. And we already see where that leads. It's real clear here. Now, chapter 13 is really interesting. And chapter 13 is one that I guess I won't belabor this, but I do think it is very key. When you have people that ask, hey, Jesus, I know you like to say Yeshua, but Jesus Christ, he did away with the law. We're all worshiping the same God, aren't we? Well, you know what? It's not honestly clear to me sometimes. Because if you're talking about a Jesus that you say did away with the law and was born on Mithra's birthday and does all this other pagan stuff, and the worship of the one true God has been so perverted to the point where all of these abominations which he hates, they now do and say it's for Jesus, you know what? To be real honest with you, it's no longer clear to me that that so-called Christ has anything to do with what the scripture is talking about here. How can we tell? Because sometimes people are confused. Answer. I'm going to suggest take them to this chapter. Take them to Deuteronomy 13 and ask them one simple question. If there is a Jesus who did away with the law and in fact did the things which chapter 13 is warning us against, for crying out loud, how can you claim that that is the Mashiach? Answer. Somebody is lying to somebody somewhere here. So long, long before, there was a set of warnings put in place. Here are the things you are to observe and do, says. And by the way, this is interesting. In the Hebrew Bible, this is chapter 13, verse 1. It's the last verse of chapter 12 in most of your English Bibles. You are not to add to or subtract from, for it's Deuteronomy 4:2 as well, and 12:32. And for those that are curious, I like to point out, that's all Old Testament stuff, Mark. Well, then go to the last book in the New Testament. Some churches will say that's the only one that matters. Well, the very last commandment in there is don't add to or subtract from. So it's important. And by the way, wouldn't you think that that would apply to the Mashiach too? Because he wrote it, and he called the Pharisees hypocrites for doing it, and he said he wasn't going to do it. Interesting. Now, at this point, I'm going to do something I haven't done in a while, and that is to remind you a little bit about what is called the, we got the Haftorah portion. We'll try to talk about that tonight, too, for a couple minutes. But I'm going to turn to the the Brit Hadashah, the apostolic writings that some at least suggest goes with this portion. And I got to admit, when I looked it up and read it, I thought, you know, that ain't half bad. You might want to turn to it if you got a Bible around and can have enough fingers to stick your finger in this one, and we'll come back to it. But go to John, or Yehuchanan, chapter 16, because that's where the apostolic writing portion of this one begins. And I don't have to read the whole thing. The whole chapter, for the most part, are these words in red. It's interesting that when you begin to understand that he didn't change, not the smallest part, not one yod or tittle. He is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And he says that in a number of places in Scripture. This, too, then, makes a lot more sense. It says, these things, and this is Yahushua speaking, these things I have spoken to you, so that you should not be made to stumble. Well, what is it that's talking about here? Don't do this pagan stuff. It'll stumble you. It'll be a trap to you. That's how he starts out here, too. They will put you, he says, out of the synagogues. Yeah, the time is coming that whoever tries to kill you or succeeds, whoever kills you, will think that he offers service to God. Let's pause there for a second. This sounds like a pretty negative prophecy, doesn't it? But can we see it happening at this point? I certainly think so. They've already put him out of the schools and out of the courthouses and out of the White House. Why is it not obvious that this is the next logical step? So don't think, he says, that the time isn't coming when folks who will try to kill you will claim they're doing it in the name of God. Well, I guess if they can kill babies and sell the parts in the name of God, why can't they just take the next obvious logical step and declare a post-birth abortion? These things they will do to you, he says, because they have not known the Father nor me. Now, this, by the way, is funny. This verse is kind of historical. You know, you look at a baseball game or a football game, you see people with these signs that say, John 3:16. You know which one that is, for God so loved the world, right? Well, this is the one I remember seeing in an interview with Al Gore one time. My favorite verse, John 16:3. He got it backwards, but it was at least apropos, because it says, these things they'll do to you because they have not known the Father nor me. How's that for a Freudian slip? How's that for a truly Yah-inspired slip? And I point this out, and this is how I wanted to take this little digression, because I think, folks, this is what we're talking about here. That's why this is so apropos. Deuteronomy chapter 13 is about how will you know the Mashiach when he comes? How will you know a fake when he comes? How will you know whether or not Yeshua, that is the Mashiach, as I am convinced and think Scripture points out, not everybody agrees, but I think almost all of us here would say, look, what we have heard tell about a Jesus that did away with the law says he doesn't qualify. That one anyway. Under Deuteronomy chapter 13. Now, I find this is a really interesting thing to talk over with my Torah observant Jewish brethren, because most of them will say, oh yeah, we know. We can name a whole bunch of reasons why Jesus can't be the Mashiach. And it's a little bit disarming to say, okay, then just understand that we agree on that score. And Deuteronomy 13 is one of the real big reasons why. So anyway, chapter 16, to my mind, seems to help make the same distinction that Deuteronomy chapter 13 is. These things I have told you, he says in John 16, so that when the time comes, you can remember that I told you in advance about all this stuff. I didn't say these things to you at the beginning because I was with you, but now he is going back to the one who sent me, he says, and you got some sorrow in your heart, so I'm going to tell you all this stuff. All right, we'll pause there and go back at this point to chapter 13. Because I really want to emphasize this. Because what this is telling us, again, is how we can recognize the false prophet. It says this, verse 2, if there arises in the midst of you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, he gives you some sign or wonder, and it comes to pass. Wait a minute, isn't that one of the tests? Yeah. Prophesy something, it comes to pass. Yeah, you must be a real prophet. Well, not so fast. Because here is the gotcha. And in the process, he says, let's go after other gods. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Which you have not known. Now, wait a second. let's see here. We got this so-called Pope wearing a funny hat in honor of Dagon, the fish god, as it turns out. Now, we'll let that slide for just a second. And he's telling us, hundreds of years ago, it's gotten to be so ensconced, the trap has been set, and the leg trap is in such a firm position at this point, most people don't even recognize it anymore. He's telling us, let's put all this pagan stuff in place. Let's change. We'll claim that, Jesus was born on December 25th. We know there's no way in Hades that that's possible, because it's not the right time of year for shepherds to be watching over their flocks or any other thing. And it doesn't fit with, you can pretty well, if you understand the course of the Abihu and the way that the temple service went, you can pretty well determine that he had to be born at one of two times of the year, spring feast or fall feast. And I have been firmly convinced that it was at the time of Sukkot, when, of course, there would have been no room at the inn, because the whole town of Jerusalem was full of people in their sukkahs, their Sukkot, preparing. By the way, one of the Hebrew translations from Hebrew into English for the word sukkah in Old English is manger. Isn't that interesting? Okay. Point is, we've been hearkening to a whole bunch of so-called prophets who have been saying for a long time, mix all this stuff in, do this pagan stuff. And we were warned. We should have known better. Even if the sign or wonder comes to pass, but the guy who is speaking says, let's go after other gods. Let's add all this stuff in that chapter 12 has just been telling us we are to utterly abhor, smash to smithereens, burn their asherim, and do all this kind of stuff. All of these things which they do, he hates, is the level of emotional disregard clear yet? What are we supposed to do? Well, we're not supposed to hearken to that guy, that's for darn sure. Or that dreamer of dreams. Why? Because it says here, Yahuwah is testing you, seeing whether or not you actually do love him with all your heart and with all your soul. We had that in the Shema tonight. We got a lot of people, if you go back and look at history, that failed this test. And no wonder. This is why we're in such a world of hurt today. After Yahuwah Eloheka shall you walk. Him you shall fear, his commandments you shall keep. What, not the guy in the fish hat? Not his supposed day of the Lord that got changed? Not his Xmas and Ishtar day? We're supposed to keep all that stuff that the God of the Bible says keep forever throughout your generations and all your dwelling places? Yeah. How clear is that? Unto his voice you shall hearken, him you shall serve, and unto him you shall cleave. Huh. This, you know what, folks? This seems to me to be pretty black and white. Pretty obvious at this point. That prophet or that dreamer of dreams, it says, shall be put to death. Because he has spoken perversion against Yahuwah Eloheka, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, redeemed you out of the house of bondage, to draw you aside out of the way which you were commanded to walk in. This is how you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. Now let's pause a second. Are we supposed to go out and start killing people? No, we're no longer in the land. I guess you'd say if there was a trap that was set, we've already fallen into it, hook, line, and sinker. What we need to do at this point, I will contend, is just understand how we blew it and why it is that, therefore, we ought to be in the process of moving the other direction, come out of her. But for crying out loud, okay, we're not in the land, so we don't put these prophets to death by whatever it means. No, we don't have the authority. They're the ones ruling the roost at this point because we have been scattered. We have suffered the penalties, the curses that we were warned about in this chapter and lots and lots and lots of other places. And now we're waiting. We're waiting for the greater regathering that's to come. But at least it is real educational to recognize how it is that the trap was set and what we fell for. Oh, and if we're not clear yet, let's just read the next few verses and it'll be real obvious how important this is and how we're to take it to heart. He says the following, if your son, your brother, the son of your mother, or your own son, or your daughter, or even the wife of your bosom, or your friend, a friend that's like your own soul, think David and Jonathan here, entices you secretly saying, hey, let's go serve those other gods.
Let's go serve the gods of Washington. Yeah. If we vote right, a Messiah will come out of Washington and save us.
I don't care what it is, folks. If it's some other god other than the God of the Bible, it says here, gods that you have not known, not you or your fathers, are the gods of the peoples that are round about you. Well, I guess that describes a whole lot of gods in modern, the greater Babylon metro area nowadays. Nigh unto you, far off from you, one end of the earth or the other, doesn't matter where they are. Do not consent to him, do not hearken, don't listen and obey, nor take pity on him, your eye shall not take pity on him, nor will you spare, nor conceal him, don't hide him either. Uh-oh, says here, you are the first to kill him, surely. Your hand should be first upon him to put him to death, afterwards the hand of all the people. Stone him with stones that he dies, because he has sought to draw you away from Yahuwah Eloheka, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. One of the complaints that I occasionally hear, this is the way of the modern world nowadays. Those of you that have listened to me for a while know that I tend to be a little bit blunt, sometimes even a little bit sarcastic about certain things. I think it's important to make the point. I have been described as dark or cynical. Mark, why aren't you talking more about love? You've got a lot of these Christian people and they're not going to want to hear this. Well, excuse me. The God of the Bible says you ought to be killing these folks. I'm just telling them like it is. Hey, isn't that a little bit kinder and gentler than picking up a stone and whacking them? Says here, somebody does the kind of stuff that we're getting fed on a daily basis, you're to kill him. Hand shall be first upon him. Now, are you saying don't do it, Mark? Yeah, I'm saying we're not in the land. I'm saying those people are in the majority. We're the ones that need to be out of that camp at this point. We've already been scattered. You see, in other words, this is a time then, opposite part of the cycle for those that are into the cycle theory. Our move today is to separate ourselves. I joke about if you're standing out on a hilltop and you see the clouds darken up and the sky turns first dark and then green and you start to see flashes and hear thunder and you got some idiot running around with a great big metal pole, move away from him. All right? So when you've got people enticing you to serve other gods and saying, there's a little paganism out here, but a little Christmas, little Ishtar sun god day, a few honest little bunnies and eggs symbolizing the innocent murder of some children, child sacrifices. Hey, we don't actually kill them. Well, I guess we do, but we don't talk about it. We certainly don't like to see the videos of it. And we don't like to hear you talking about it either, Mark. It just kind of reminds us. Well, you know what, folks? Excuse me, but this is the reason why this stuff is here. So we can actually pull out, for crying out loud, rather than listening to what the Pope says, he's going to tell us about man-made global warming and about serving Molech. Oh, God, are you really talking about the Pope? You're darn right I am. He's a liar and the truth is not in him. We have a whole bunch of so-called religious leaders who have been lying for century after century, spreading the kind of crap, the kind of trap that has gotten lots and lots and lots of people killed. Everything from what you should eat to how you should worship the God of the Bible, only it ain't him anymore, and let's not kid ourselves. So when you start seeing people that are telling you, wait a minute, you're not winning friends and influencing people by telling them the truth, well, excuse me, what's it going to take? For 1,700 years, we've inherited lies from our fathers, things wherein there is no truth. And now we're to the point where we're openly killing people, where we're literally getting to the point where what Yeshua said is going to happen. They'll kill you and say we're doing God's work. You're damn right they will. It's the God they serve. And it's time we woke up and said, you know what? That God is an abomination, because that's what he says. Walk after these gods whom neither you nor your fathers have known. Well, our fathers knew these fake gods pretty well. We've been walking in those Catholic-inspired, Protestant-inspired ways for a long time. Folks, it's a little bit late at this point for us not to be coming right out and saying, hey, when you see things like what Deuteronomy 13 is telling us, let's just be honest with one another. No, again, let me make this point. I am not suggesting that you rise up and kill these people. I'm not. We're not in the land, period. But I am suggesting that we quit listening to them. And I am suggesting that we be real, real clear about which God we serve and which ones we do not, and that we separate ourselves. And just like when you see a guy that's stupid enough to run around with a great big metal pole in the middle of a thunderstorm, you separate yourself from them. Because the complications, the implications, the plagues are obvious. And they're repeated. And this portion, too, is making the same point. What does it say here? Why is it that they were supposed to be so hard on these fake God preachers? All Israel shall hear, says verse 12, and fear, and don't do any more wickedness like this in the midst of you. Well, we know what happened, right? The history's clear. They didn't, and the bad guys did. And they ended up getting kicked out of the land for that very reason. Now, it says here, you hear tell about some cities that Yahuwah has given you to dwell in, and they're saying certain sons of Belial have gone out. They've drawn away the inhabitants of the city, saying the same thing. I'm thinking one particular city starts with R and ends in Om. Let's go serve some other gods, which you've not known. What are you supposed to do? Inquire, search diligently, ask, see what the truth is, and if it is certain that there is such abomination wrought in the midst of you, well, we're going to extend the principle. Smite the whole stinking city with the edge of the sword, and all the cattle too. Gather everything together and burn it with fire in the middle. Is it clear yet just how important the God of the Bible thinks it is to expunge these things, which he says not only are a trap to you, but he positively hates them? Do not cleave this devoted thing. Ha-charem. Into your hand, so that he may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show mercy on you, have compassion on you, and multiply you, like he sworn to your fathers, so that you'll hearken, keep all of his commandments, and do that which is right in the eyes of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Okay, I guess I'd say, you know, that seems somewhat clear to me. Now, at this point, here's what I'm going to do. We got chapter 14. We've actually got a couple more chapters. This is a fairly long portion. So I'm going to talk a little bit about chapter 14. I know it's important because it, too, is a repetition of things we've heard. What strikes me as always interesting about this is about food. It's about food and not food, among some other things that are listed in here. And I've had this discussion this very week with at least a couple of people in the Christian church that are saying the same thing. Oh, well, you know, where does it say in the New Testament that this is true? Well, what does it have to? Isn't it enough that the God of the Bible says over and over and over again, here are the rules, I've laid them out, I'm not changing, I don't change, I'm the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, I wasn't going to change it? Well, Paul says I'm not under the law anymore. Well, you know what the word means in the Hebrew? It's instruction. He's assuming, no he's not, he is telling you that if you've learned it, he shouldn't have to keep harping on it. Why does he have to keep repeating things that by now you should have known? And I guarantee you, the guy that wrote the I'm not under the law stuff, Shaul was his name, knew what he was talking about. The fact that he's been twisted is our problem, not his. I'm not under the law. I can commit murder. All things are not necessarily profitable for me, but, doesn't matter what I... Come on! Shaul himself, throughout the book of Romans, says, shall we sin more that grace might abound? For crying out loud! No, you fool! That's not what I'm saying. God forbid, is how he put it. So here we go one more time, where he is describing, as if we didn't already know, but Moshe wanted to make it clear too, you are the children of Yahuwah. What are things that are appropriate for you to do and not appropriate? Well, for one, I'm telling you what food is. You want to live long and prosper in the land? Don't eat poisonous food. Don't eat stuff that's not food. He says here, don't cut yourself, make baldness between your eyes for the dead. You're a set-apart people, and Yahuwah has chosen you to be his own. Do not eat anything abominable. Here are the things, just in case you've forgotten, it's not obvious, that you can eat. Ox, sheep, goat. There's a whole list of them here. Basically, the if it walks on land parameters are pretty simple. If it has a parted hoof, cloven in two, and keyword and is in there, and it chews the cud, well, you can eat it. Somebody was asking about people. Can you eat people? It's not forbidden in the New Testament. Well, come on. How many people do you know that have a split hoof and chew the cud? I don't know of any. Unless they're goat people that are being engineered in some lab outside of Washington, D.C. Yeah. All right. This is not rocket science, folks. He is repeating something that is pretty clear. And, you know, Peter's dream changed it. Well, read all of Peter's dream in Acts 10. He tells you. The guy that had the dream tells you, Yahuwah is telling me, no, it's not about food, it's about people, those people that he has cleansed. So there's just no excuse for basically trying to make the claim that, well, I want to eat what I want to eat, and I want to eat things that will get me killed. I want to eat all this stuff that's not food. All right. Of the clean birds, you can eat. Don't eat the birds of prey, basically vulture, bearded vulture, osprey, falcons, kite, ravens, all those kind of things. Then we get around to the things that are in the water, too. Essentially, if it has fins and scales, swims in the water, you can eat that because it's food. If it's a scavenger, shellfish primarily, oysters, crabs, other things, don't eat them. And you know what? All you got to do is turn on the news and look at science. Now, we've gotten to the point now where the world is so polluted, lots of even relatively clean fish and animals are getting poisoned. It turns out if you take cows and you feed them things that they're not designed by God to eat, you can infest them with bovine spongiform encephalopathy, BSE, mad cow disease, and so forth. In other words, you can turn even good things into not good things if you work hard enough to poison with genetically modified frankenfoods. But essentially, you can still see that it was the unclean things, the pigs and the shellfish, through which most of the diseases came. Those were the things that in the ocean, the shellfish, that picked up the mercury and the heavy metals first. Why? Because that's what they were designed to do. They were the scavengers. All right. Don't eat roadkill. Don't eat things that die of themselves. And roadkill's not, you know, precisely what it's talking about here. You can give this stuff to the stranger. You can sell it to a foreigner. Do not see the kid in its mother's milk. Does that mean you can't have a cheeseburger? I tend to part company with the oral tradition on that score. Yeah, the rabbis teach it that way. This is the verse that says that. And I've seen some interesting teachings. I actually watched David Foreman's video on how important it is that we understand the oral Torah, and I have to part company on that score. I understand the rationale. I'm just not buying it. If you tithe the increase of your seed, you eat it before Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh in the place that he has chosen to put his name. Tithe of your corn, your wine, your oil, and all that kind of stuff. It's too far away from you, if that's true. Then you can turn it into kesef. Literally says, turn it into silver. Isn't that interesting? Turn it into silver. Bind up the silver in your hand. Then take it to the place that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh tells you to go. And on there, you turn the silver for whatever you want. Back for oxen or sheep or for wine or for strong drinks. Whatever your soul asks of you. Party down, dude. You are to rejoice. Rejoice. Simachta. You and your household. As a friend of mine likes to say, this is one of those wonderful things where the creator of the universe says, you know what? It's all about fellowship. Let's have a great big barbecue. Let's get together and do this. Oh, remember the Levite too. And you do this, interestingly enough, at periods. At the end of every 3 years, bring forth your tithe, lay it up within your gates, remember the Levite, and literally, let's get together and let's have some fellowship. Now, I've seen some quite, I think, fun midrash on all of this, and it boils down to the fact that when you understand the way Torah is written here, what the creator of the universe is talking about is something that when we do it, if we do it, it builds fellowship. It builds camaraderie. And it actually, at the same time, stimulates the economy, does all kinds of interesting good stuff, brings us back to a place where we can literally be immersed in His Word and in those others who are around us in fellowship that will help to strengthen these ties and this whole attitude of obedience to Yah. It's a wonderful thing. End of 7 years, you make a release. Creditors, release these things from your brothers. Okay? If you do these things, Yahuwah will bless you as he's promised you. You will lend to many nations, will not borrow. Well, them days are gone, aren't they? You'll rule over many nations, they will not rule over you. If there's among you a needy man, one of your brethren, don't harden your heart. Don't shut your hand up. Open your hand to him. Lend him sufficient for his need. And don't basically say, oh, you know, we're getting pretty close to this year of release, and maybe I might not get paid back. Lend it anyway. For the poor shall never cease out of the land, it says. What, even if we have Obamacare? And anyway, then you're to open your hand unto the poor and the needy brother. If you have a person who is sold into bond service, Hebrew man or woman, serves 6 years, 7th year, he goes out free. And remember, when he goes out, now we've seen before, Exodus chapter 21, this concept of how he can have, and he can say, I don't want to go, and you bring him out, and he loves you, and you take it all, and you put it through, and he can be a bondservant forever. But, as I've indicated, and I'm not going to belabor tonight, I think the standard Hebraic position is that's a failure. We're supposed to be teaching these people how to walk in Torah. So they ought to be able to go out at the end of this period of bond service and say, I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to go into debt anymore. Not going to make that kind of mistake anymore. Now I know how to be a free man. I'm no longer under bondage. Hey, isn't that an amazing thing? No longer under the law of bondage, of debt. And you furnish him liberally. Give him a lot of good stuff from your flock, your threshing floor, your wine press, out of the things that you have been blessed with by Yah, you bless him. Remember, you too were a bondservant in Egypt. Remember, he has served you well too. Chapter 16 talks about the month of Aviv, keeping the Passover and making the offerings. What we do with leaven. So again, these are, one more time, repetitions of things that you'd think we ought to know. They do kind of all fit together in this common theme. So many things, when I look back and I see, you know, just compare the general thrust of this portion to the general thrust of what most of us that were raised in a paganized Exchan tradition are coming out of. Okay, we've been fed a lie after lie after lie, mixing the pagan things that he says we're to utterly detest. Trapped by the things that, well, we were lied to by false prophets. Go and work, entice yourself after these other gods. And what's the result? Well, we're eating crap that's not food, and we're forgetting his real holy set-apart days like Passover, the one that really basically lays out for us the whole point of the Mashiach and the things that were done. And instead, we've got a fake. What does it take for us to begin to realize how far gone all of this stuff is? It ends with this section. 7 days. This is talking about Passover. Still, you're to keep that feast. He'll bless you in all your increase. And there are 3 times in a year, these are called the Feast of Ascension, that all of your males are to appear before Yahuwah in this place that he has put his name, the place he has chosen. And these 3 feasts, most of these are utterly foreign, of course, to Exchianity, because they got better ones. They've got Ishtar Sun God Day and Xmas and, of course, Halloween now. On the Feast of Unleavened Bread, time of Passover, on the Feast of Weeks, Shavuot, and on the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot, coming up here in the fall. Do not appear before Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh empty-handed. Every man is to give as he is able, according to the blessing upon whom Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh has given you. So the portion ends there. And as we wrap it up, I'm going to just point out one more thing. This is something I'll probably spend some more time on tomorrow, but I do at least think it certainly is deserving of mention. I mentioned that John 16 and 17 is the portion in the Brit Hadashah, the apostolic writings, that goes with this portion. And as it turns out, in the prophets, the Haftorah, is one of my very favorites in Scripture. It's the very last chapter of the prophet Isaiah's book. And this one, too, I don't have any trouble seeing how well it fits. I'm just going to read a couple of verses because I think they fit. Basically, this is from the beginning of his last chapter and towards the end. By the way, even the King James-ish version here has this nice heading. It says, chapter 66 is about true worship versus false. Well, how's that for a pretty concise summary? Thus says Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, here's the one upon whom I will look, one whom is poor and of a contrite spirit, and who trembles at my word. So let me ask this. After reading the portion tonight that has been largely neglected by much of ex-Christianity for, you know, the better part of 2,000 years now, I think there ought to be, if people would look at this honestly, more folks reading it and trembling at his word. It's a good thing. Then it goes on in verses 3 and 4 to say the following. Now, this is a little bit problematic because I don't think we quite understand it. But I'm going to suggest to you that what is really being talked about here is whether or not we're doing stuff, not just the right stuff, we don't even do that anymore, but doing the right stuff for the right reasons. Because that was one of the things that was true in the times past. It was part of the reason why, of course, both northern and southern kingdoms were driven out of the land, put into exile for their whoring, for their abominations. Oh, aren't we keeping the feast? Aren't we doing the right things? Well, they were going through the motions, and they were adding all this other stuff in. See, where are we at today? We don't even go through the motions anymore. We've even forgotten what the motions were. But it does say this. He who burns incense, just like as if he blessed an idol. These are bogus sacrifices, in other words. And the question is, to whom are they offering them? Well, verse 3 ends with this. And I think it's so incredibly appropriate still. Just as they have chosen their own ways, says Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and their soul delights in their abominations, so will I choose their delusions, and I'll bring their fears upon them. Because when I called, no one answered. When I spoke, they did not hear, and they did evil before my eyes, and they chose that in which I do not delight. Ishtar eggs, Xmas trees, sun god worship, oh, and let's sacrifice a few children. Wait a minute, no. They aren't being sacrificed, Mark. That's for medical research. And yeah, I don't really support abortion. I just pay my taxes because I'm supposed to. I will choose their delusions, he says. Do I need to say anything more? Oh, we got all kinds of ways of justifying allowing this stuff to happen in our name and sitting quietly. Well, there's a football game on. Pass a beer. I mean, slice of pizza. When I spoke, they did not hear. When I called, no one answered. But they did evil before my eyes, and they chose that in which I do not delight. What's on Channel 4? Hey, American Idol's on tonight. I'll mention this last one, because compared to some of those things, this is almost a throwaway line. But I've already talked about the fact that in this portion we have one more repetition again of how to recognize false prophets, how to recognize when we are being fed a lie, how to recognize what's food and what's not food. But, oh, don't you know, Mark, see, they didn't repeat that in the New Testament. Well, excuse me. Yeah, they did. You just don't read it. Isn't it enough that the one that you claim is the Mashiach said he wasn't changing one yod or tittle as long as heaven and earth still existed? You'd think that would be sufficient, wouldn't you? Here's Peter at the end, long after Yeshua is gone, saying, hey, Lord, I never ate anything, not once, that was unclean, Father. Well, wait a minute. I want to say, come on, is Peter that stupid? He walked with Jesus all those years, and here it is, a long, long time afterwards, and he hasn't figured out, go get a ham sandwich? What's wrong with this guy? Hadn't he been paying attention? Or just maybe somebody's been lying. Well, let's see what Isaiah said. Yeah, this is Old Testament stuff, but it seems to apply prophetically. Certainly applied in the past. I submit that it will apply again. Those who sanctify themselves and purify themselves go to the gardens after an idol in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abomination of the mouse shall be consumed together, says Yahuwah. Huh. Resurrecca. No. People that are paying attention, I think, will read things like that and hopefully begin to tremble at his word. Okay. So there's the place where I want to stop tonight. We'll talk a little bit again in a minute about the news, because I think the news helps to make this point also. But I just want to say this again, because I think this is so important. We are clearly at a time when a lot of things are beginning to come together, and it's probably never been more important that we understand his word and indeed tremble at his word and say, okay, let's start walking it out. Let's not be fooled anymore. Let's not sit quietly by while people are doing abominations and saying, oh, it's okay. Think about how many good people we're bringing to Jesus by mixing the pagan abominations from the pit of hell that he hates with all this stuff that he's not real wild about either. There's a lesson here, and it seems like it's time to quit trying to soft pedal it.